This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. On the 8th of January, the police force launched the Trim and Fit program for obese cops with a BMI above 25. Bukit Aman's Director of Management Communications, Dato' Zulkifli Abdullah, said that at least 11,000 of the 122,400 police personnel and officers are obese. Essentially, they're more likely to die from health problems than in the line of duty. Inspector General Khalid Abubakar warned that they will not be promoted or confirmed if they fail their health screening. Today, I speak to occupational therapist Joyin Teo. She's actually got a special interest in obesity management as well as corporate health to discuss how obesity affects work performance and how workplace policies can ensure healthy, fit personnel. Welcome to the show, Joyin. How are you today?
Hi, I'm great. Nice to meet you, Meera.
Joyin, how did you build this interest in obesity management of all things?
That's a very good question. My family actually owns a fitness gym back in Butterworth, Penang. So that was how I got the interest in fitness and obesity management in the first place. Then after getting into occupational therapy, I initially started out in pediatrics and moved on to content development, where I was developing curriculum for kindergartens and early childhood learning centres. So at that time, it was a very R&D type of job. And I felt that I needed to get involved with clients again. So on the side, that was when I started to develop my obesity management practice. And then it eventually grew to where it is today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think time couldn't be better for you to actually build that practice now. I mean, we are the fattest nation in Southeast Asia. Obesity is a big problem in Malaysia, amongst children especially. Yeah. How do you define, there's a definition for BMI as far as obesity and being overweight is concerned, still the same or have we revised it?
At the moment, the definition of BMI for overweight is still 25 and obesity is still 30. However, I do not think it's entirely accurate to measure a person's health status based on their BMI alone, because a person can have a lot of muscle and you can still have a high BMI. So you have to take the body fat percentiles into consideration as well.
Okay. But at the moment, it stands at 25.
Yes.
Above 25 to 30, 29, you are considered overweight, and above 30, you are considered
obese.
Yes,
that's right.
Could you share your experience so far working with corporations and you know, the health of personnel? Do you find common themes coming through? Do you find common problems coming through?
Common themes and problems, yes, definitely. Because the people that I work with are working adults and the work environment does have a huge impact on their health. One of the things that a lot of them mention is perhaps the disruptive routine of their work and how it actually disrupts their health. For instance, there might be workplace policies in place which are not conducive for them to develop health-promoting activities, such as some rules that say, oh, you know, you cannot drink in the office, you cannot have food on your desk. And so these are small things, but accumulated, they can actually have an effect on the person's health.
And do you see more and more Malaysians in the workforce coming forward to get help?
Yeah, definitely, yes. I think Malaysians are very proactive in terms of getting help. Yeah, and I do see those that contact me to get help specifically, they are looking for solutions that go beyond what the commercial weight loss industry offers, which is a lot of quick fixes, you know, take this product and then you lose the weight and then this sort of thing. They don't want that. They want something that is genuinely healthy and which they can sustain for the long run.
How is your approach different from a dietitian, for an example, and how does it differ from a fitness trainer, for an example? How do you come into the picture?
Okay, to understand that, first of all, we have to understand what occupational therapist roles are. And occupational therapy, I mean, for a lot of people, when they talk about occupation, they think about job. But the word occupational means occupy, as in how you occupy your time and your space. So naturally, the way you occupy your time and your space will have an effect on your health. Similarly, if you do have a health condition, that will affect how you occupy your time and your space. And that is where occupational therapists come in. So we would look at how the person engages with the things that they do every day that occupy their time, you know, and how the person engages with the environment around them, which is their space. And so we look at, okay, how do you participate? How do you engage? How do you get involved with these things? And how these factors come together and have an effect on your health.
Mm-hmm. And does that include determining diets for them and exercise regimes for them?
Well, typically, as far as diets are concerned, I would work together with other health professionals who would be more adept at prescribing the diets, which is a dietitian, you know, or other pre-planned programs. And as far as exercises are concerned, this is something that usually needs to be customized into the client's routine. A lot of people actually find going to gyms or, you know, taking out time for exercise disruptive, and that's why they don't do it. So it's not so much about exercise, but more about physical activity and how you integrate it into your daily life. And this is where occupational therapists come in. Mm. So we would look for the spaces in your daily life where you could integrate these activities.
Right. So the person who's been missing all this time, when all of us say we have no time to go to the gym. So that's where you come in and start organizing our lives and tell them, you know, here, this is where the time you have to go. Where do you draw the line when you approach discussions about obesity? It can be quite a sensitive topic. How do you approach?
Yes. As far as discussions of obesity are concerned, I think it is very important to create an open, safe, and non-judgmental space for people to be able to talk. So sometimes I do have people come up to me and say, oh, yeah, do you think I should lose weight? So I will never tell them whether or not they need to lose weight. I will say, do you think you need to lose weight? Because unless you actually want to take action, you know, there's no point someone trying to force you. The weight loss industry has a tendency to go into fat shaming, to prey on people's insecurities. And I am firmly opposed as far as that approach is concerned. So it is more of allowing people the space to be the best selves that they can be.
Which is not easy. An easy thing to do. So what you're saying is it you need to decide that you want to do it, and only then it's going to work.
Yes.
If you have no desire to lose weight, then it's not really going to happen.
Yeah.
How does, based on your experience, how does obesity affect or does it impede work performance?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because obesity is a gateway health condition. So usually people who are obese would then have other complementary health conditions, high blood pressure, diabetes. My clients actually find these chronic diseases that develop along with obesity very disruptive. It means taking sick leave, and when you're on sick leave and you're spending a lot of time in the waiting rooms, you're not at work, and of course that would impede your work performance. You can't perform if you're not at work in the first place. Mm-hmm. There are some professions such as oil and gas offshore workers who can actually get fired if their BMI exceeds a certain the limit as stipulated by their safety regulations, obviously because it would impede their work performance and also their own personal safety when they're offshore. So yes, obesity can have a huge impact on a person's work performance.
Do you think everybody should have a policy where you have to be in shape? Either you cannot encroach onto that obesity mark?
Not necessarily, because then people would feel like they're forced. And again, we were talking about fat shaming earlier. So we do not want people to feel like they're forced. But what can be done is probably, you know, to create a conducive environment where people can actually engage in health-promoting behaviors rather than a restrictive environment that doesn't allow them to take measures to take care of their own health.
We always talk about obesity, and there is a difference between being obese and overweight. Mm. Do you work with people who are overweight as well?
Yes, I work with people who think that they have a problem. So as long as they feel that, okay, this is important to me and I need to do something about it, I'm not able to do something about it on my own, I need help. Yes, so I would work together with them.
Okay. Do you evaluate your clients to decide on the appropriate therapy, or is there a lengthy discussion that happens?
Yes. So in occupational therapy, we put a lot of emphasis, because it's a very tailored kind of a customized kind of therapy. So I would use an occupational therapy framework to evaluate my clients and say, okay, these are your priorities. You know, these are the things that are getting in your way. These are the factors that could influence your condition. These are the environments surrounding your circumstances and what are the dynamics behind them before I can actually come up with a tailor-made approach for that person. So I would use occupational therapy frameworks or models for that.
Okay. Does it always work? Is it all-encompassing?
So far, yes. Although when I work with a client, sometimes I might realize that they might have certain conditions that even themselves, they themselves might not have realized.
Health conditions?
For instance, eating disorder type behaviors, or perhaps, you know, certain pains and aches that they have not addressed. So I might need to cross-refer them to a physiotherapist to address their pains and aches, or to a psychologist to address their eating disorder type behaviors before we are able to proceed smoothly with the therapy.
Okay. We're discussing obesity management with Julian Teo, an occupational therapist. And the reason we embarked on this discussion is because of the Malaysian Police Force that is now, the police force is actually launching a trim and fit program for obese cops with a BMI above 25. That's not really accurate, is it, Julian? 25 is just being overweight. 30 is mm-hmm. when you're obese. So I suppose in the police force, there's no room to be overweight as well. We'll come back and have that discussion because apparently, on average, 560 police officers took medical leave each day during the last 4 years. And wow. This includes high-ranking officers. And this has translated to about 38 million in losses
yes.
to the force. And, you know, if this happens countrywide on a corporate level as well, mm-hmm. you can imagine the losses going
yes,
forward.
Yes, yes, definitely.
We'll have this discussion up yep. next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. Julian Teo, an occupational therapist with an interest in obesity management and corporate health, in the studio with us. We're discussing the obese cops in our country at the moment. We seem to be struggling with a problem with our policemen who seem to be obese. 11,000 of them out of the 122,400 apparently are obese. I think that's about 10% if my math isn't quite wrong. We are trying to embark on how to minimize loss in productivity. I mean, we lost 38 million in the police force over the last 4 years because of this problem. And we're not taking into account on a corporate level how many companies are contributing towards these losses on a nationwide yep. scale. Mm. What is involved in obesity management therapy?
This again goes back to what an occupational therapist does. So we would look into, like I said, the factors that influence a person's health. We will look into their everyday routines. Okay, so what are you doing from the time you get up in the morning to the time you go to sleep, you know? Are your behaviors health-promoting behaviors, or are they behaviors that will actually put you at risk, you know? And how do you increase the amount of health-promoting behaviors without disrupting your existing schedule and worldview too much? Because if it's too much of a disruption, people are going to say, oh, you know, it's too much work, I'm mm-hmm. not going to do it. Yeah. So that is mainly what is involved in terms of occupational therapy and weight management.
What can companies do to encourage this or help facilitate the process and make it easier for people to stay healthy?
Flexibility in the work environment definitely helps. A lot of my clients face situations where they find that the work environment actually restricts them from being able to be healthy. For instance, I've got a client who worked 9 to 4. Those were the working hours with no lunchtime. Those were the official working hours, and that is not healthy. So the client would take the lunch after 4. So that's a huge gap, you know, in between meals. But fortunately, the client had a workplace policy which didn't restrict them from eating and drinking while working. So we managed to integrate some snacks into their working hours. But there are people whose workplaces do not allow them to eat or drink mm-hmm. while at work. Sometimes I think these policies are in place because they're trying to, perhaps they want their employees to be more disciplined or something like that. But it may not necessarily be conducive for the person's health. Other things like having to bring work home, not having that mental space, you know, to take a break, and all this contributes to stress. People who work odd hours, such as outsourced workers. So again, it's about knowing how to regulate your daily routine so that you can have as much health-promoting behaviors as possible and as little risky behaviors.
Just to go back to the Malaysian Police Force, one of the reasons given for the cops being overweight is work-related stress. Mm. Do you think this is a reasonable explanation?
It is valid. I do not know much about the Malaysian police force's work routines because I do not have clients in the Malaysian police force yet. But a lot of my clients have health issues due to work-related stress. So I think that is a valid concern. And I think it is necessary for the police force, when implementing their Trim and Fit program, to look into, you know, what conditions are they creating to support the people who are on this program, as opposed to just telling them, okay, you have to lose weight and then we'll toss you in the deep end. It's up to you to take care of your own health.
Okay. And how does stress manifest?
To be able to maintain our health also requires a certain degree of self-care, being able to care for ourselves. And when we're too focused on, like for instance, many of my clients are parents. They're focused on their work, they're focused on their children, they're focused on everything else except for themselves. So they would naturally neglect their self-care.
So, I mean, in what areas do you see stress? Is it just being obese? Is it because I understand that stress can actually increase your cortisol levels, and after which that could lead to belly fat, that sort of thing. In what other areas have you seen stress affecting indirectly and causing weight gain?
Ah, okay. Yep. Well, stress eating, definitely. And I see that a lot in my female clients. Well, when the body is feeling weak, we would naturally have an attraction towards more sugary things, because sugar gives us energy. So that is important to be aware of. And people are just taking lots of carbohydrates without even realizing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That would definitely cause weight gain.
We need to reduce our intake of sugar, don't we? In a big way.
Yes.
The whole country, actually.
Yep. But the reduction of the sugar subsidies has helped a lot.
It has?
Yes. People can taste a significant difference in their food when they go out and their drinks when they go out. So I think that's a big step forward. And it remains to see what are the long-term effects of the reduction of the sugar subsidies.
Some countries are actually considering a sugar tax because that's how much disadvantaged they are as a nation because of sugar. One of the stress contributors is actually shift work, Julian. But you can't do much about that because if you're in the police force, for an example, they would work shifts. Many other occupations, you work shifts. How do you manage stress and shift and your diet and ensure that you still, you know, don't put on weight?
So again, like I said, we would look into your health routines, your everyday routines mainly. And I have worked with clients like that before. So I had a client who was actually doing well, and then suddenly she was assigned to do some shift work and her sleeping schedule got disrupted. So her entire self-care routine got disorganized. So it was a matter of guiding her, okay, you know, are you getting enough sleep? Now you have to wake up at this this time. What time do you go to bed beforehand? It's about being deliberate in terms of integrating those habits into one's routine.
Mm-hmm. Has it worked?
Yes, it has. Yeah, so she managed to adjust herself very quickly. Yeah.
The whole weight loss journey can be very emotional, Julian. I mean, sometimes you lose and then you put it on really quickly and it's hard work to lose. It's so easy to put it back on. Mm. How do you manage the emotions?
Well, it usually helps if you're working together with a professional who is actually providing you with a safe, open, non-judgmental space, as I mentioned earlier. So for a lot of my clients, that is the support they need. I mean, just look at it this way. It's a temporary situation. After you have resolved your weight issues and you have actually taken control of your health, I don't think you're going to face that mental and emotional frustration anymore. You know, so it's just about once you get the ball rolling, then you'll be fine. So it's the initial part that's the hardest. And that is where people can actually benefit from working together with a qualified professional who is able to support them in a way that actually helps them be the best version of themselves.
Do you think this is something that individuals should come and seek this sort of help? Or should, you know, companies and institutions initiate that for their people or their staff?
I have both, actually. So when I started out in the field of obesity management, it was working with individuals. It's only in the last half year that I've started embarking in corporate health because I realized most of my clients are working adults. For employers who feel that their staff could benefit from a weight management program, they might decide to ask me to go in and give a talk you know, make it very general. So rather than pinpointing, okay, you need to lose weight, you know, you need to see this person. So that helps to give their employees exposure. And then if the employees are keen, at least they know that there is support there, or where they can go to look for help.
Okay, so what you do is you go in and start giving these talks, and then slowly the company initiates that discussion? Or do you just wait for the individual to come forward and say, look, I need help?
Yeah, I would let the individual come forward and say that they need help.
Okay, and companies, are they willing to, financially, this will cost money. Are they willing to invest in this?
Actually, there are. There are my clients who manage to claim, you know, from their companies to say, okay, you know, just tell me what is the total sum and then we'll make the claim from the company. There are companies that provide these benefits. I think these companies realize that the return on investment is worthwhile compared to the losses sustained by an employee not around. As you mentioned earlier, you know, the losses sustained by the police force. And it's not just, you know, the losses sustained when the employee is not at work. It's also the losses sustained when the employee is at work but not able to perform at the optimum. So obesity management kind of falls under chronic disease management. And the RAND Corporation actually did a research on it. And they found out this disease management, you know, is something that can actually help companies develop significant savings that way.
Going forward in the long run. You also mentioned, as an occupational therapist, you look at space, the environment in which this individual lives in, whether it's work, whether it's school, whether it's at home, you know, that kind of thing. But some of that, those environments are beyond your control. So how do you help guide them to, you know, exist in this environment and at the same time adopt healthy habits?
Yeah, so it is important to identify what are the factors in the environment that can be helpful towards them. And we have something called the hierarchy of vocational rehabilitation, which we use to also help disabled people adjust back to the workplace. But I think it also works here where we're talking about helping unwell people adjust to the workplace. So the first level of vocational rehabilitation is same job, same employer. So we might need to look at, okay, how do we make adjustments to the tasks, the demands that you have on the job, you know, while remaining under the same employer? Or alternately, you know, is there a possibility of looking at you doing something else that can be a little bit more conducive to your health under the same employer? If not, then, you know, could you work somewhere else, still doing the same job, in a place that is more conducive to your health? Or, you know, in the worst case scenario, you might need to change jobs entirely, which has actually happened to some of my clients.
And work to their benefit?
Yes, health-wise. Again, it's about priorities and what sort of adjustments the person is willing to make. It is very personal, very individual. So we'll have to look into situations on a case-by-case basis.
Okay. What would you like to say to obese or overweight individuals who are interested to embark on a weight loss journey?
Well, something that I always tell my clients before they even get started with me is that anybody you engage with to help you, or any external help that you get on your weight loss journey, is temporary. It's like a visitor. But you are the one who has to live with your body. So if you think about, you know, can you continue to live the way you are, you know, with your health condition, depending on how many years left you have in the life expectancy. If you're very young, then, you know, you probably have 40 more years. Can you continue to live like this for the next 40 years or 30 years or 20 years? And if not, you know, then would you be willing to take ownership and start learning about yourself, start being aware of yourself, your condition, and also your circumstances, and start learning and getting the information so that you're able to critically evaluate what is it you need to do in order to maintain your health and maintain your general well-being and still be able to do all the things that you want to do and need to do. So that is very significant. It's about taking ownership of your own health. And I think that is probably the most important message. Yeah.
What about the support, the people around the individual? How do the people around the individual give them the support that they need?
I get the people around my clients involved in their weight loss journey. For instance, if I'm working with an individual, I met actually say, okay, who are the people living with you? You know, who's your family? Is your family involved in your meals and preparation? And then I would actually work together with them to educate their family so that their family has the right information in order to know how to support these people. I've actually got a little special report produced, and I'm putting it on my website, getmecare.com, the top 5 weight loss mistakes that Malaysians make. Because sometimes when family members try to be helpful, they try to bring in the wrong information and pressure the person who is already in a very vulnerable state to do the wrong things. It's not very conducive. So being equipped with the right knowledge to help the person is definitely necessary. But also the family members need to know that there is a fine line between being helpful and being intrusive. So usually I would also get family members to read books like How to Win Friends and Influence People or Personality Plus. And these books will actually help them understand how to improve their family dynamics and interaction to create a supportive environment for the person. Because sometimes, yes, you have family members with very good intentions, but if they're nagging you, you don't really want to listen to them and you couldn't be bothered. In fact, there's some people who might decide that, okay, I just want to spite you, you know, for the heck of it. Yeah. So very important for family members to remember that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And for a person in a vulnerable state, you know, showing first that you care is the most important thing to do. In order to be able to move forward together with the person on their weight loss journey.
What are the 5 mistakes that Malaysians make?
They say, okay, I don't eat rice, and then I will eat biscuits, I will eat bread, I will eat bihun. You know, oh, you mean what? Eating these things is just the same as eating rice? You know, that's an example.
Okay.
I think generally Malaysians are not very health literate. There are people who say, oh, I don't eat a lot. Yeah, but when I actually ask them to track what they're actually eating, they're drinking a lot of sugary drinks, snacking on keropok, and they don't realize that these are the things that will have an impact on their weight. So these are some of the mistakes that Malaysians make.
Thank you very much for joining us today and sharing your thoughts on obesity management. That was Joyin Teo, an occupational therapist with an interest in obesity management and corporate health, talking to us about how we can better manage ourselves on a corporate level as well as a country level. On The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.